Lloyd Alexander.
So tell us, Nathan, how much did that differ?
Oh, God. Okay, so where to start? So okay, yeah, to begin with, the Horned King is not the ultimate villain.
He's like a Sauron to the Morgoth.
He's the general. He's like the head warlord of the great evil Auron. And Auron has the Black Cauldron at the beginning of the series. He's had it for years and has an army of the Deathless Cauldronborn with which he's used to conquer most of Prydain.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know most. A good chunk of Prydain.
Okay.
And the second book, The Black Cauldron, is all about a group of people come together and say, hey, our spies have just told us that the Black Cauldron's gone. That someone went into, or that, oh no, wait, no, sorry. Cut that bit. So the Black Cauldron is a bunch of people get together and say, you know, we need to stop him from making more Cauldronborn because we can't kill them.
Mm-hmm.
This is an army that we cannot destroy. Mm-hmm. So we need to go into the heart of Mordor and destroy the Black Cauldron. And so they go, they launch a campaign to find and destroy the cauldron, and it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
It's missing.
It's already gone.
It's already gone when they get there. And the whole book is what do we do? How do we deal with this? And figuring out where the cauldron is, they find out it is in the hands of the three witches of the Marshes of Moria, Ordu, Orwin, and Orgok. And they are brilliant characters. I strongly urge you to go, dear listeners, go and read these characters because they are wonderful. And they find out they have the cauldron. And they make a trade to get the cauldron. And a character that was nowhere in this movie sacrifices himself to
stop it.
To stop it.
Yeah.
After another character who was nowhere in this movie,
oh my gosh,
Boromir and tries
eight.
To
so there were eight. Himself. There. I'm sorry. Real quick.
Yeah.
I just saw that there were eight additional people that added story elements to this.
No.
So nine writers. And eight people that added story elements to this.
Oof.
Holy cow.
Yeah. But yeah, there are incredibly vast amounts of things that were changed. The Gwythanes are more birds rather than dragons.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. The Horned King, in the books, you only actually see him once, and he never speaks.
Oh.
And I think the biggest... That magic sword plays a huge part in the series. Tarin cannot draw it. Because if he tries to draw it, it bursts into flame and burns him.
Mm.
And Iwanwi tells him it's because, well, yeah, here, let me read these runes on the scabbard, and it says, only one of royal blood may draw them. And Iwanwi's the one who takes it because, well, it belonged to the king, so it must have been the best one, right? And Tarin gets furious with her at it because, no, you're not supposed to dishonor the dead. Their two characters are fascinating ones, especially being older and having spent more time in the fantasy tropes.
Uh-huh.
Whereas Tarin, as I said before, for most of the series, he's pretty hapless. And he wants to be a great hero, and he wants to be this noble lord and do all these great things. But he's surrounded by people who are so much better at it than him.
That's interesting.
That is really interesting.
And the whole arc of his character is him finding humility, and becoming great through that.
That's interesting.
And Iwanwi is she's a princess, but she's incredibly tomboyish and incredibly strong-willed, and every time. You know, Tarin tries to say, no, we should do this thing because it makes the most sense. She almost always comes back with, no, that makes absolutely no sense at all. We should do this. That's the common sense thing to do.
Right. Yeah.
And and most of the time, since, again, this is about him finding humility, he's doing, like, the noble, courageous, we should charge forward. And she's the reasonable, grounded one who's like, well, then you'll be dead, and it seems to me that a dead pig keeper is only slightly less useful than a live one.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And she's an incredibly strong female character. Yeah. Fluter Flam is, yes, bumbling, but again, incredibly interesting and engaging character.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess that just means we need to go and read them now.
Yeah.
That's really the... How about you, Neil? Any closing thoughts on the film?
It still holds up, honestly. Like, looking through, watching it this time, really paying more attention to the art instead of just the story. The film is gorgeous.
It
yeah.
is.
It's stunning.
Stunningly beautiful
impressive.
Film.
And graphic.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
can
tell that when they let themselves go and said, yeah, we're going to go PG-13R or whatever...
They kind of went
we're
whole
gonna,
hog.
Let's,
yeah.
let's dissolve this skeletal wizard from the inside
right.
out. Let's, you know...
Fire and death and, like,
yeah.
lots of...
Slime.
And
yeah.
And it was... Yeah. How about you? What'd you think?
Yeah.
You've never seen this before.
Yeah,
right?
yeah.
Disney you've never seen before.
The Disney
What's
movie
your...
I've never seen. It's funny, because, like, I could see all of the openings for a musical number that they didn't take. They, like,
right.
wrote those openings in and then
just in
didn't
case.
Yeah and
yeah.
then didn't take them. I thought the animation was just gorgeous. It
was
really
probably
was
one of the best
it was
things.
Really beautiful. Gosh, it also reminded me, it's funny because we're looking at the Amazon page, it reminded me of Quest for Camelot,
right.
which I saw in theaters. Oof. Regrettably
that's damning.
I mean, it's like with some of the older Disney movies, but also some of the current, more recent Disney movies, where it's like, I really like this, this, and this, but I hate that these characters are so blank, or I hate
mm-hmm.
that this dialogue is so bad, or I
yeah.
hate blah, blah, blah. You know, like it happens to the best of the Disney movies, to be honest. I could see where there was more that
mm-hmm.
was taken away, and I wish... It had that.
Yeah.
Well, as Nathan mentioned, it's what you get when you try and shove what was it two books.
Yeah.
2 books into 90
two
minutes.
Books.
Yeah. Which you can tell.
Yeah.
But
you can also you get the sensation of disjointed moments. Like you'll have moments where Tarin is upset with Gurgian. Like Gurgian's like, I found tracks. Where, boy?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
there's just suddenly this two-faced shift of I'm really upset with you. I want you to go away. You're useless. Oh my goodness, you're my best friend ever.
Yeah, we're
like,
told
I will cry
that character
for your death. Yeah.
growth happens without actually seeing character growth.
Yeah.
yeah.
Tarin and Iwenwe at the end, where there's like, oh, we're holding hands, and oh, I think you're actually... When did that happen?
Yeah,
when
did
you
happen?
Have the chance to look into each other's eyes?
Now,
and
if
have
we'd
that...
have had a musical number,
exactly.
where they
that's
both sort
happened.
Of figured out that they had those feelings and didn't say anything, that would be different, because the audience then has that insight.
The
right.
classic 80s musical montage.
Right.
Yes.
But hey. Yeah.
No, I really liked it. What did you think?
Well, here's the funny thing. Like I said, I think I've never watched this from beginning to end, ever. And you hear a lot of bad things about this movie, about how it's
yeah.
awful,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, it nearly destroyed the Disney Animation
studio,
and
right.
and I can understand why, because, one, it is a beautiful movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just, like, they threw themselves into the black cauldron of that animation.
Sure.
Yeah.
Like,
yes.
Like, that was, it was stunningly good, and it was a level that we have not seen since, like, Sleeping Beauty.
Mm-hmm.
And even then, it was incredibly nuanced
mm-hmm.
and detailed.
Yeah, like, when we're zooming in on the castle, and you
uh-huh.
see all the detailed brickwork, and all the
yeah.
Bits hanging off,
right.
and
every,
the gnarled, twisted shape of it.
It's
they...
fantastic to
yeah.
look at. And so, like, I looked at that, and if you just looked at it from that standpoint...
Mm-hmm.
That's a great movie. Like, it literally felt like, I mean, it's almost an hour and a half, and it felt like it could have been a 3-part miniseries
sure.
on TV.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it really felt like, because the story was too disjointed for me. Like, I looked at the story and was like, I'm not really following this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
And not because it was, you know, overly complicated or anything like that, just because there just wasn't enough there.
Yeah.
yeah.
It was just some, we're just going to string ourselves along.
On all these plot points.
To just get
yeah.
through the awesome animation of what's going on here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, there were so many things where it's like, what's with this sword? What's with the prince? Why is she here? Why is he here? Why are we?
There's a lot of questions about as far as, I mean, yes, you can make those leaps of faith and assumption, but it doesn't necessarily make the film better.
No,
right.
It just made it
puzzling.
A good sort of highlight way of showing that is the whole bit where Taryn is captured and then Aimwee comes up through the floor and they meet for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
In the books, that happens in a completely different castle with a completely different villain.
Mm.
And so, the writers obviously said, okay, let's just lift this scene. We need to get these two characters together because it's the protagonist and the love interest. Let's just lift that scene out, stick it here, and now we just need to find a way to get Taryn here.
Yeah.
And
done.
That tying together of things that weren't originally written that way.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's
really interesting.
Interesting. Like, but again, looking at it, that being a Disney movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It
does not feel like
one. No.
Like,
you'd say like, oh, that's Warner Brothers or
like I felt like I was watching. I actually
Don
felt
Bluth.
Like I was watching
yeah.
a Don Bluth film.
Exactly.
Like that's what it honestly felt like.
Yeah. It felt very much like a Don Bluth movie to me.
It almost felt like, and I don't know. I'd have to look through like the actual history of this film, but it kind of felt like they kind of handed this whole, like, we have a movie, we'll just hand it to our animators.
Yeah.
To do whatever they want, and nobody looked in on them.
Right.
No one came by and was like,
"Are you still being Disney?"
Because
the
animators, they're gonna do their job.
They're gonna do their job, and they're like, "We're gonna throw $20 million, $40 million at this," and they're like, "Hey, we're actually over that $40 million. Let's go see what they're doing." And they walk in, and the room is on fire, and
there's
paint everywhere.
There's a Mexican standoff in the corner.
They're printing their own money. Like,
there's an actual Gurgi they brought to life.
And there's a bunch of guys in the corner playing D&D. And
that's what's going on in the writer's room. For Black
and they're
Cauldron.
Like, what's going on here? And they're like, we made a movie.
they come out of the wreckage like wild haired and crazy eyed. Made you a movie.
And they're like, okay, let's go watch
canister.
It.
Yeah.
And they go watch it and they're like, this is unwatchable. What is this thing? And so we never hear from it again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But like, I think it stands up.
I liked it.
If, like I said, if you could put this at a three-part...
Yeah, if each book... If it's a five-book arc, and if each book was given this much attention...
Oh, yeah.
Each individual
they would
book
cover
given
so
that much.
Attention,
as given a full standalone movie with that level of art, it could have been groundbreaking.
Oh,
it
my God.
It could have been
a
redefining of
even
what animation could
do.
What fantasy could do. What could be done with movie. I mean, this is something for people to research. I don't think trilogies were really a thing.
Well, no, because
point.
we didn't have... we had... Star Wars was making a trilogy.
Right.
But
yeah.
that was but, it. Like, it wasn't...
And then... Like, we've stopped with trilogies. If it had been a five-part movie, or five-part series, five-movie series, they could have, assuming people let them do it, and the viewing public was willing to go with them.
But, I mean, we look at... Yeah, what's really interesting is, like, we look at fantasy from the 80s and 90s, and fantasies from the 80s and 90s were like, look, I know you have, like, 12 books, and they're all really important... But we gotta pull it down to one movie,
yeah.
mm-hmm.
and we don't have that mentality anymore. We have a Game of Thrones mentality.
Now it's like, feed it to us slowly over 3 years.
I mean, look, we're not even done with Game of Thrones. It's been 6 years of Game of Thrones stuff. We look at Lord of the Rings. They took full length 3 hour movies for each book, and that wasn't even enough.
Yeah.
No. Well, I mean, they had the extended edition, which was even more, and even then they still omitted things.
Yeah. And like, we could have watched those forever.
Yeah.
And like, Harry Potter, that's eight movies over 10 years.
It is interesting as a
two and a half hours each. And so we look at, now we understand that if you want to make good fantasy, you got to put the time in.
You have to put the time and the detail in.
Because this was, the detail's all there. The detail visually.
The time.
Just, the time. They just didn't just give the give it the time it needed. And if they had, like, I agree with you, like, that could have been groundbreaking.
Sure. Yeah.
If they had, like, done it, done a faithful adaptation with that, you know, clever and faithful
now,
adaptation.
Do you think, had it been done by a different studio, had it been done by Warner Brothers,
Someone besides Disney.
I don't know.
With this level of detail, with the same product done by a different
studio.
At the same time.
I don't think so. Yeah. I don't think anyone else would have done better.
I think the... Well, this is, you know, take a shot. This is the only person I think could have possibly pulled this off and done it well is probably Don Bluth. At this time.
Honestly, yes. I think he...
Would anybody have let him?
Yeah.
That's the question.
That's the thing. Would have anybody have gone to it?
Yeah.
Probably not. But that's the problem.
Only,
like, if they... Yeah, go for
the
it.
The only other animator that I think of would have been willing to take a bite out of this, Bakshi.
Oh.
Oof.
I mean, oh, that would have been so...
Yeah.
I mean,
no, I could see
but
it.
But here's the thing.
Yeah.
The man can animate. He can do a really amazing job.
He's done brilliant stuff.
I have... issues with his Lord of the Rings adaptation. We'll get to that another time.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later.
Some of his other films are fantastic.
Yeah.
Truly fantastic.
I mean, say what you will about it, The Wizards is a classic.
Oh, yeah.
Don't get me wrong. When I think Bakshi, that's the first one that comes to mind.
Yeah.
Really. Because sometimes you need a little more than magic.
But overall, I honestly think we've hit this, it's almost like a new era of Disney.
Oh, definitely.
We're closing to the end of...
We're closing out the Bronze Age.
The Bronze Age. We're on the tail end of it. Bronze Age goes from what? It's Jungle Book? Or is it before that?
I don't remember
right now. It's actually like the 60s. It's the 60s to the 80s are really the Bronze Age. And we're coming to the tail end of it. But it kind of feels like we've hit this new...
I absolutely see where this movie is a linchpin.
Oh, yeah. This is the turning point.
And it's fascinating that we've politely forgotten that it happened.
Yeah.
Because it's a beautiful linchpin.
Well, the thing is, within the studio, all right, as far as PR goes, okay, let's forget this film happened. People hated it. We'll forget it. However, what did we learn animation?
Yeah.
Yeah. So they kept moving.
Internally, what did we learn?
How do we learn from this?
What small nuggets of positive review have we gotten at all about this film?
Yeah.
And people did say it was beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, they used it. You're right. They used it and they grew from it.
It has
so.
What I like to call the Good Dinosaur Syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
Did any of you watch The Good Dinosaur?
I actually forgot it and how it came out.
Cool.
What is The Good Dinosaur?
It's a Pixar film that is awful.
It's absolutely not worth your time to watch.
It's an awful Pixar film. Oh, this is
that says a lot,
like,
right?
That says a lot, right?
Like, I don't even want you to see it so we can talk about it. It's not worth it.
But here is the thing about it. It is one of the most stunningly beautiful animated films I've ever seen. Like, there are points in it. It is computer generated, 100%. And I could not tell.
Couldn't tell. Looked like a photograph.
It was so beautiful and so well done.
Very nice.
See, you can't tell me that and then tell me not to bother.
No, you should. You honestly should go see it.
We'll go see it with the sound off.
just watch it. And we walked out of that film and after seeing it and we're like, that was awful. The story made no sense. None of it made sense. It was...
really, really dumb.
It was really dumb.
It's like a huge set of steps backward.
And I said, well, why? Why did they make it in the first place? And I look at it as, that's a stepping stone film. That's a film where they went, look, we can actually push this aspect of animation forward by doing another film like this.
Sure.
And that's it.
Which is why they did it.
And then now they have that skill set and that, like, those programs under their belt, and they're going to move forward with that. But yeah, I agree with that. Like, this, people looked at this and like, oh my gosh, that was the type of animation I want to continually see. And they go, okay. And that's the type of animation they do from now on.
Right. Because, I mean, it's all right there.
Something that I'd like actually to point out, similar contemporaries. So this came out in 85.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In 1988, the world was introduced to the animated film Akira. Perhaps one of the most realistic animated films ever at the time.
Yeah.
Which basically set the standard for how you draw realistically.
Yeah.
This has a lot of similar instances of realism to it. Some of the character, the way they move and what have you, is more realistic than it had been previously.
That's completely
true. The detail
in
the backgrounds, the detail of characters, it's there. mid to late 80s, we really start seeing people delve into how close can I get this piece of animation towards realness without it hitting that that uncanny valley.
Yeah.
That was where the whole rotoscoping thing came in.
Yeah.
I mean, but yeah, the 80s is also like the domain of Ghibli. Like that.
Oh, yes.
Like Ghibli
certainly
did a ton of really beautiful, amazing movies in the 80s, and so we're
probably their most realistic one of the 80s being Grave of the Fireflies.
Yeah, Grave of the Fireflies. Which
if you haven't seen, see at least once. Bring tissues. I would like to point out the film was released as a double feature.
Oh, was it? I didn't realize
that.
Yes.
My Name is Totoro was shown immediately after it.
Oh,
oh
goodness.
That makes everything okay.
Yes. We'll have to watch it that way.
That is interesting because, you know, there is the theory about what My Neighbor Totoro is actually about.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which is a fascinating double feature, putting those two
right
together. That
yeah
that sort of underscores that.
I mean, I could see how people could see that, but I don't agree. But anyway, Miyazaki aside,
we'll get to
thank
Miyazaki
you guys
eventually
for joining us tonight.
Yeah, thank you guys so
thank
much.
You for having
yeah
me.
It was
lots of fun.
Terribly enlightening, and I'm glad we watched it with you guys, because without your input, without your insight into it and your memories of it, I would have been like, "Heh."
We were helpful.
Thank you.
And to be fair, it is a bit of a mess in places.
Sure.
But I found it quite enjoyable, to be honest. So thank you guys.
All right. So that was
number 25,
and we're now heading
halfway to 50.
Halfway to 50.
Yeah, halfway.
Next
to 50.
One is.
I know what it is.
Oh, what is it?
The Great Mouse Detective.
The Great Mouse Detective, number 26.
Oh,
which reminds me, I need to go find my Deerstalker cap because I have one. It's here somewhere.
I'm wearing it for that.
Yes.
All right. Thank
okay
you so much, guys. And
thank
take
you
care.
Bye.
Ta.